Hello, and welcome back to the Drinking Liberally podcast, the show that combines good alcohol with some friendly political banter. I'm Kevin Wilson, and this week I'm rejoined by my co-host, Jeff Fenner.
I'm back.
Welcome back, Jeff.
How's everybody doing?
We're both back. It's been a little while since the two of us have been on mic together. A
couple vacations, work trips for us.
Yeah, work trips that turned into vacations. Yeah,
my wife took a little vacation, had the girls, so life, man.
And where did you go?
Atlantic City.
All right. So that's not much of a work trip now, is it?
Some work got done. Where did you go, sir?
New Orleans.
A lot of work getting done in New Orleans.
We're both equally guilty there.
Yours is a little better than mine, though.
Yeah, I'll take New Orleans over AC any day. Yeah. It was a lot of fun. Had a lot of fun out checking out the local breweries. I drank a lot of your favorite beer we touched on in a previous episode, Andy Gator from the Abita Brewing Company.
It's everywhere there, right?
It's on tap everywhere. Yeah. Became a big fan of a lot of their beers while I was down there. They had...
You try the almond one? Not almond.
I think it's just the amber, right? Abita Amber? That's like their standard beer. It was really good. Low alcohol content too, so you can kind of, you know, survive the entire
night.
No, Andy Gator I think is like 8%. But it's delicious, so it's very confusing. Checked out a lot of breweries down there too. There's a lot of craft brews popping up over the last 5 years. My wife did a little brew tour for me.
Nice.
Set up another brochure. She did something similar in Chicago when we went out there in July. So it took me around to a bunch of the smaller breweries.
Salt of the earth for doing that.
Yeah. All had something new and interesting at each one. There's a place we went to called Mael that, I think I'm saying that right, that doesn't have like a standard list of beers. They don't distribute. Okay. You only get their beers at their brewery there. And the list changes like monthly.
Okay.
So every time you visit, there's probably something new, which I like that idea.
Except if you like it, you live in Jersey.
Yeah, if I find a new if I find a new favorite beer, I'm never getting it again. Got to ask them for the recipe and brew it myself.
Right.
But yeah, fantastic town down there. Checked out the Oktoberfest. They had an Oktoberfest going on last Saturday.
That was a great place for it.
Yeah.
Not super hot like it is in like the summer.
Comparatively speaking,
not 100. It wasn't 105. No. Right.
It was 90 one day, and then by the end of the week, it was probably like 75. So we had a good mix of temperatures there. Nice. Wasn't too humid either, which is nice. So,
glad you had a good time.
Thanks, man. And
I need to get there. Never been.
Never been?
It's a hole in my travel resume.
Really?
Yep.
Oh, my goodness. You have to check it out. It's fantastic. And then I'll give you plenty of good bars and restaurants.
I don't think my wife wants to take me there because I might die.
She'll find you on Bourbon Street the next morning when they're hosing it down. Washing you off the sidewalk.
Correct.
Yeah, Bourbon Street's definitely, it's changed even in the 5 years since I last went there. It's become even more touristy than it used to be.
Yeah. And,
It is what it is, but there's plenty of other places you can check out.
For sure.
Are great for locals and people that want to get a little off the beaten path.
So are we drinking a Louisiana beer today?
We're not, actually. They don't let you fly with it in your bag.
Ridiculous.
So I did not bring any back, unfortunately, but... Then again, we are going to keep with our October theme with another Oktoberfest. We decided to go a little local today. This week, we have the Oktoberfest from Zigmeister Brewing out of Hackettstown, New Jersey. So pretty west of us here, almost on the Pennsylvania border between Jersey and Pennsylvania there. It's 5.3% alcohol by volume. And the first thing you'll notice when you pour this... Yeah, crack another one of those open, Jeff. First thing you'll notice when you pour this is that it's actually a little hazy for an Oktoberfest. Oktoberfest tend to be a little clearer. This is interestingly hazy. It's a dark copper color. I'll be perfectly honest, I'm not a huge fan of the aroma for this beer. And Jeff, by the look on your face, you're not either. That said, the taste is a little better. Don't drink it out of the can like Jeff just did.
Oof. Please don't drink it. I like the can, though. It feels really cool.
Yeah.
The taste out of the can, not so much.
Yeah, don't drink an Oktoberfest out of a can. It's not the ideal way to present that. Pour this bad boy out. It gets better. Let the head settle down. I promise you it tastes better afterwards. So thankfully, the taste does not follow the aroma of this beer after you let it settle. It does have that bready caramel type flavor of a Oktoberfest.
Right.
but a little roasted, like kind of like roasted nuts to it. It's not overly sweet either, which I like. The finish on it's pretty dry. Just a little of that the subtle sweetness that I just mentioned lingers afterwards. As far as Oktoberfest go, it's perfectly drinkable. Fits right in with the changing seasons we've got going on here in Jersey. And Jeff, give this a taste out of the the stein.
The correct way. Better that way.
Yeah. Still not your favorite.
Well, I'll tell you, I've never, we've always kind of joked here about my palate for beer, and I have actually gotten into the Oktoberfest only as far as the St. Adams so far. I can really kind of handle that one. I was just really glad every time I look at the outline and it's not a pumpkin beer, because disgusting.
Yeah, pumpkin beer will never be on here.
Okay, good. Because that one I would be then having some scotch.
Yeah.
So, pretty good. Like you said, the smell kind of hits you at first before you drink it, which I think affects the taste a little bit, but definitely not a bad beer.
Yeah, the smell, honestly, and smell can kind of turn you off from some beers too.
Yeah, 100%.
I mean, it's completely linked to your taste.
I hate the smell of Heineken.
Smells like skunk to me.
I like the way it tastes. Like, if I plug my nose, I can drink it all day. But if I get it at first, can't do it.
I'm 100% with you on that.
Yeah. No offense, Heineken. Your beers taste great. Just smells terrible.
Yep. Yeah, so that's the Oktoberfest from Zigmeister Brewing out of Hackettstown, New Jersey. We'll be drinking some of this, and maybe we'll mix it up with some Sam Adams, too, since there seems to be some in our fridge. So it's going to be an all-around Oktoberfest day again.
And we're going to need a lot of beer.
Yeah, there's a lot going on. We've got 2 weeks worth of nonsense to catch up on. Let's talk, Jeff, about impeachment developments. We'll do that first.
Yay, impeachment.
And before we get into it, though, as I was doing research for this, I couldn't help but notice, obviously, how many times the word quid pro quo, or the phrase, kept popping up. So let's turn that into a little bit of a drinking game.
Love it.
Every time we say quid pro quo or some variation thereof, take a big old sip of that Oktoberfest you got in front of you. We'll see if we can even say that word by the end of this.
Something that's really annoying, every time we get into one of these kind of bigger, more focused investigations, there's just always this dominant word out of it, and it gets focused on so much. We had no collusion, no obstruction, which is not obviously one word, as is not quid pro quo, but phrase is probably the better way to put it. But it really kind of, I hate the fact that it draws so much focus to it, because now it's like, if that exact thing didn't happen, all the rest of this is nonsense. That's just a small annoyance I have with the way that this stuff's covered.
I 100% agree with you. They boil it down into just a tagline.
A catchy little phrase that you can throw for clickbait, 100%. Yep.
But it's honestly nothing new with the news media or politicians in general, because Watergate.
Yeah.
Everything was just wrapped up in the term Watergate.
We just consume so much more of it now. It's such a faster pace.
Exactly.
It feels like
it's overwhelming.
Seen quid pro quo.
Yeah.
I'm getting us a drink, by the way, discussing this off the bat. I had ulterior motives here. but I've just seen that. I mean, it depends on what you follow and where you consume your news, but it's everywhere. I mean,
I haven't heard this term since probably last time I saw Silence of the Lambs.
Or you watch a sex ed video at work when they were harassment video.
Yeah. Thankfully, I think this is one that's going to stick. This term, I think, actually does matter in this case.
100%.
Because there is, according to U.S. Ambassador Bill Taylor, he's the ambassador to Ukraine, there actually was a couple of situations with an explicit quid pro quo. And I'm saying that slowly, so I don't slur over it as we take another sip of this beer.
So if you don't know what this is, Kevin, could you define it? I mean, I'm sure anybody listening to this knows exactly what this means. But
what the phrase means?
Yeah.
Yeah, actually, let's take it from Ambassador Sondland, another guy caught up in this whole scandal here. So Ambassador Sondland tried to really cover all this up by telling Bill Taylor.
All over text message, by the way.
Yeah, that President Trump is a businessman. Now, here's the metaphor that'll explain a quid pro quo. Sip. When a businessman is about to sign a check to someone who owes him something, the business asks that person to pay up before signing the check. So you're getting something, and I'm giving you something in return.
Ah.
That's all it means.
I believe that's the definition of quid pro quo.
It is the literal definition.
There's going to be some pauses here, folks.
Yeah, we're going to be dead by the end of this segment. So U.S. Ambassador Bill Taylor, who, you know, if you're not familiar with him, Ambassador to Ukraine, you might know him from our rousing rendition of Drinking Liberally Theater that we did last
Great work, last by you guys, by the way.
Thank you. Reading off some of his text messages where he expressed concerns about what was going on between the White House and the Ukraine. So this week he's been testifying in front of Congress. It's been a closed door, so we only get, you know, leaks here and there. But one member of Congress described it as the most disturbing thing he's heard in his time, albeit limited. He's only been there 10 months.
But. Right, yeah.
But that's...
Well, that's really saying something in the last 10 months.
Yeah, a little worrisome, and it might be exaggeration, I don't know. But those are some, I don't know, kind of scary things to hear from someone walking out of these sessions, right, hearing what Bill Taylor had to say. What's become clear is that there were two explicit quid pro quos here. Jeff, where's your beer?
Along with the 800 other implied quid pro quos.
Exactly. And impeachable offenses. Now, one was that Donald Trump essentially told the president of Ukraine, Zelensky, that he would only get a meeting at the White House if Zelensky announced a public investigation into corruption and into Joe Biden and son and all that. So he's holding a White House visit hostage there. Why is that important? It's because it legitimizes Zelensky on the national stage.
Yeah.
Like, getting to come to the White House is a big deal.
That photo op sitting in the Oval Office, big deal.
Yep. And that says to Russia, hey, we've got his back.
Yep.
Right? He's one of our allies. We're supporting him. And it's also the reason why people across the aisle were upset when Donald Trump was talking about inviting the Taliban to Camp David. Because that's a great photo op.
Yep.
Bringing it back to today, though, the other portion of that quid pro quo is that... Oh, we're going to need a lot more beer. Is that the military aid package that Congress passed to aid the Ukraine was going to get held up until President Zelensky committed to investigating quote-unquote corruption in his country.
And I mean, tell me if I'm wrong, not only was going to get held up, possibly was held up, right? I mean, there was a gap between when it was supposed to be delivered and when it got there.
Yeah, and there were excuses made by the White House as to why it was held up, and all of them are fishier than the last.
And then there was actual little cherry payment on top of that, too.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
We're hearkening back.
This is pretty damning.
Yeah.
This is the most concrete testimony that we've had in a long time. And again, Trump's committed a ton of impeachable offenses. The emolument stuff alone.
We're going to get there, right?
Should be impeachable. But this is, I think, easy to digest for the public. They just know, like, again, it's quid pro quo. They know now what that means because they listen to this podcast. They've
guys
heard
are welcome.
The evidence of it.
It's like Sesame Street for politics.
Yeah. I think this is a much simpler story for people to wrap their heads around. And Republicans, I think, also understand, well, some of them too, how damning this testimony is.
Yeah, I mean, right now they're in a position where you have one of two choices, right? You're going to go Lindsey Graham, double down on this. You're literally just at this point, you've decided, sold my soul, there's no turning back. And I get it. Even if he turned back now, he's not saving his reputation. There's really nothing. I mean, we'd love to see it, right? Because that's one more of Trump's allies down. But that's not happening. He's too far in the water. That's fine. Or you're going to have to start to kind of either distance yourself, or as we saw, there's been better voting with the Republicans on certain issues in the House where they're coming to our side. So
yeah, not only that, we've seen a few Republican governors have even come out now and kind of said, yeah, this is getting a little too much for me.
Before we hit any more of the quid pro quo, and I hate to do this to everybody, Mueller report's done and over. The only question I have for you is, did Mueller just miss all of this, or was it in all the redacteds? Because, I mean, like, there's some big-time stuff in here, and I don't know, maybe it didn't cover, wasn't in his scope, which he was very focused on, obviously, or maybe the time frame kind of didn't overlap on some of it, but... God, that was a terrible investigation if this stuff was out there and was blatantly missed.
I really wonder, like, time will tell, obviously.
Yeah.
Because there was a ton of information. Like, that was turned over to the Southern District in New York.
Right. Maybe that was part of...
And other state investigations, and federal ones for that matter, actually. So maybe we're going to learn more that some of this is coming from the seeds that the Mueller investigation planted. Like, we know that Michael Cohen, Trump's old lawyer, had connections to Ukraine.
Correct.
You know,
which is why I think there's some overlap here over that investigation that... I'm just, maybe it was tied to the Cohen stuff and it couldn't be talked about in there. I don't know.
Right. It might be ongoing still. We don't know. But yeah, if it turns out at the end of the day, after, you know, SDNY's finished their investigations and levied charges or exonerated people, what have you, that none of it was tied to the Mueller investigation. Yeah, I wonder what the hell was he doing this entire time?
Like, oh, there's a smoking gun sitting right over there, but nah.
Let me, yeah, I'm not going to check that for fingerprints.
I just, you know, I wondered if you'd thought about that at all as this was going on. Because I
every
was like,
every day.
What?
Every day.
Maybe it's good, though. Maybe this would have got lost in the just the vastness of that report. And
true.
As we saw, and again, all respect to Mueller and everything he's done, all the service. But we also probably wouldn't have wanted him as the face guy trying this out. Because we saw, unfortunately, how bad that went. And, you know, when he got in front of the Senate there to talk, so...
Yeah, he wasn't the best spokesperson. He's clearly getting a little older.
Yeah. So maybe
Robert
it turns
Mueller,
out
is,
it's
yeah.
better that we do it now. Back to quid pro quo.
Yep.
Ooh, I was quick there.
Drink.
It's all right.
That's going to be our sobriety test as we leave.
How fast can you say it?
Similar to what we saw with Mueller, though, Mueller's got a pretty, you would say, unimpeachable reputation.
100%.
But they still did it. They demeaned him left and right. And by they, I mean Republicans and Donald Trump. We're going to see the same thing happen to Ambassador Taylor here.
Yeah.
Right. And this is a guy, you know, he's a West Point grad. He served tours in Vietnam. Like, this is a hero.
And he's the ambassador to a country that's not exactly easy to be an ambassador to.
Sure.
He doesn't have, like, the cherry picked.
This is a guy that worked under both George W. Bush and Barack Obama. So before people start accusing him of being a partisan hack, like, he's worked under now three presidencies. This guy has been around. From all accounts that we're hearing, he's an incredibly intelligent guy and seems like an honest guy. I would like to see more people doing what Bill Taylor is doing because it seems like a ton of leaks that come from behind the scenes where people have grave concerns about the White House, but no one speaks up.
Yeah.
So this guy's actually speaking up, so more power to you. And that's got to be tough when you've got the propaganda machines working against you. We have... Just the other night, I don't know if you saw this clip. The former acting U.S. Attorney General, Matt Whitaker. Remember that guy?
How many ago was he?
Yeah, right. he was on Fox News the other night and came flat out and said that, you know, and so what if Donald Trump abused his power as president? Abuse of power is not a crime. Now, you laugh and you should, and everyone should be smacking their heads so hard right now because... Maybe Matt Whitaker isn't as smart as he thinks he is, or he's just being purposely dense here, because abuse of power was literally one of the articles of impeachment used against both Nixon and Clinton.
Right.
Abuse of power is 100% an impeachable offense. So I don't know what fucking world Matt Whitaker is living in, besides the one where he's just holding water for the president.
These slips keep happening, right? That one, all of Giuliani, every time he opens his mouth, Giuliani.
Yeah, keep talking, Rudy.
But I mean, are they... Again, are they just being dense on purpose? Like, are they like, I want to tell you guys what's going on, so here, I'm just going to lay it out for you. Even Trump with his phony emoluments clause, like the stuff he's been spouting off, they're just absolutely admitting to these crimes in plain sight because so far there's been nothing's happened to them.
Right. No repercussions at all.
Yeah.
And if they just, I feel like Donald Trump's mind, he thinks if I commit these crimes in plain sight, I'm being transparent and people want transparency.
That's what he promised. He's going to open the doors.
Yep. Just shifting the goalposts and trying to make it a new normal.
Yep. Keep talking, guys.
Yeah, please, please. And Donald Trump, please keep tweeting.
Yes.
My God. Because I feel like every time he tweets now, he pokes more holes in his defense.
Yep.
For this impeachment inquiry.
His lawyers have to be like, what the fuck?
Right.
Come on,
take
man.
Take his phone away from him. Just this morning, 7:30 this morning. Donald Trump tweets something that he saw on Fox News, of course.
Right.
But he tweets a quote from Congressman John Datcliffe, where John Datcliffe said on Fox News, neither he, meaning Taylor, or any other witness has provided testimony that the Ukrainians were aware that military aid was being withheld. You can't have a quid pro quo with no quo. Which, fun soundbite you got there, and we're going to take a brief sip.
Where's the quo?
Now, that's the argument. How could I, if the Ukraine didn't know we were withholding it, that means I was just asking them for a favor. And there was no promise of anything in return. That's the argument they're going with, okay? That's as of 7:30 this morning. 4 hours later, on the same day, breaking news from the New York Times. Ukraine officials knew about the U.S. aid freeze before it became public, according to interviews and documents obtained by the New York Times. I'm sorry, if Trump thought that was going to be his defense to hide behind, wow, that they poked holes in that real, real quick.
Yeah, I mean, and so did his own people with the text messages that we've all read. So.
Yeah, it's wild. It gets crazier and dumber by the day, I feel. You see us popping up on like social media, like keep calling this stupid Watergate, and it's so accurate.
Keep telling on yourself, dummies. Keep talking. We should give Giuliani a podcast here at Pod Media.
I think if we got a bottle of whiskey, he'd probably come by.
He definitely would.
Did you see, before we get into the next part,
yeah.
Did you see somebody went through Giuliani's Twitter feed and his followers and who he's following?
Right.
When he's refreshing Twitter, who is he getting reports from?
Okay.
It's mind-boggling.
Really?
There's a ton of QAnon conspiracy theory people
of course.
That pop up in there, whether or not it's their like pinned tweet on their profile, or it's in their bio, or they're just retweeting QAnon crap. And if you don't know what that is, maybe we'll do a deep dive in the future, but we don't have enough time to unpack that level of crazy.
Yeah.
It's those people and just like far right-wing conspiracy theorists. So in a way, you're like, you look at this, and he's like, of course he's as nuts as he is. And maybe he's not drunk on these shows. Well, he's probably drunk on those
really
shows.
Drunk.
But maybe he's not as senile as we're making him out to be. His entire diet of news.
He just got indoctrinated.
Yeah. He's indoctrinated by far-right conspiracy theorists. It's all he's reading all day. Like, we joke about bubbles for everybody, and, you know, that's a serious thing. We all have our own bubble that we live in.
Yep.
And we follow just people.
Echo chamber, 100%.
Yeah, the echo chamber is a real thing. When your echo chamber is nothing but conspiracy theorists, guess what? You're probably going to become a conspiracy theorist. Let a little insight into Rudy Giuliani's brain. So I highly recommend everybody look that up. Check it out in our footnotes on our website, www.drinkingliberallypod.com.
Does that close?
It's very insightful.
Quid pro quo.
Ooh, that does close out that section. Cheers. Let's talk about some additional dummies that...
We can't do 4 more years of this dumbness.
No, God, no. So let's talk about the skiff news. All right, that's another phrase you're going to hear a lot about in the next couple weeks. And a skiff, you know, it's an acronym for Sensitive Compartmented Information Facility. What this is a secure room that politicians, spies, intelligence agents, people like that are all going into to read or learn about classified information. This is where the most sensitive information is disseminated out to the various parties that have the clearance to receive it. So it's a very secure room. And by that, I mean, you can't go in there with a cell phone or any electronic device. You're not bringing in your personal laptop or your work phone or anything. You check it out the door. It goes in a special locker that gets locked. They can wand you down. Like, the whole point is we're trying to prevent foreign governments, spy agencies, from bugging the room.
Right.
Because any cell phone can be turned into a microphone, right?
Correct.
And I would imagine people in our government, all the politicians that get to go into these rooms, are probably high-value targets, right?
You would think.
Target their cell phones.
Yeah.
So, smartly... Protocol is that you leave those devices outside. Well, today, House Republicans, led by Matt Gaetz, decide to barge into a skiff to essentially spy on the ongoing closed-door testimony that Adam Schiff's Intelligence Committee was getting for this impeachment inquiry.
Sounds legit.
Yeah. So, it's a stunt. They talked about it beforehand. Matt Gaetz came out and had like his army of, you know, a dozen or so House Republicans behind him. And they all decided to go barging into this room. The problem here is that a lot of them brought their phones. And you're going to see a lot of flip-flopping on this where they say, no, we didn't, and blah, blah, blah. But There were reports originally that they brought in, they took videos, took photos.
Jesus.
It's a major no-no and a legitimate, like, national security risk. If you go through, we'll tweet out these names and we'll share them on the website too. Republicans that tweeted and were like, currently sitting in this skiff trying to uncover what's going on with this impeachment inquiry.
It's tough to do without your phone.
Right. And they're and they're saying they're doing this in the interest of transparency, that they're doing this for the American people, which, come on, we know you're doing this to spy for the White House.
Right. There. They've compromised the
you
room.
You just brought it up that, yeah, they're tweeting from inside and they're framing it that way in their own tweets, saying I'm inside there or currently sitting in a, Republicans are being very quiet and sitting around listening to Adam Schiff. Okay. And then a bunch of them, a couple hours later, I guess, realize their mistake and how this made them look.
Right.
Because a number of them would, they subtweeted themselves and said, previous tweet from a staffer outside the room.
Are you fucking kidding me?
That's the excuse they're going with now. So they're saying they were going in and out of the room, providing updates to the staffer who was saying...
Staffers generally say, I'm sitting in the room.
Yeah. So, yeah, they're trying to cover their own asses here. But not everyone was smart enough to cover their ass that way, because they'll probably get away with it doing that, honestly. Representative Alex Mooney of West Virginia, at least as of this recording, has not posted such a disclaimer. He had tweeted, breaking, my report from inside the skiff hearing room, where we are exposing Adam Schiff's secret so-called impeachment inquiry. And he posts a just an audio clip of him giving a breakdown of what's going on. Again, stupid Watergate. Just next level dumb what these guys are doing.
And you said it right. They're getting this information going straight back to the White House with it.
Absolutely. That's why they're there.
Lapdogs. Right. Trump's lap. Yeah, let him get ahead of it before we get the information.
And the argument you're going to hear from these Republicans is that we should be allowed in there in the interest of transparency, right? Adam Schiff is doing this impeachment inquiry in secret, blah, 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 which is really funny to me because if you'll recall, just like 4 years ago, Trey Gowdy, Republican, never allowed Democrats into the skiff while they were holding Benghazi hearings.
Right.
Because he thought it would undermine the hearings and make it less likely that people would tell the truth, that people are, you know, providing testimony. It would make them more comfortable and allow them to tell the truth. And they were doing it behind closed doors. And it would prevent grandstanding from anyone that was there.
Right.
So you're not doing it for the cameras. You're having an honest discussion with the people in that room.
Right.
So...
all of this is obstruction. They're all trying to obstruct with anything that we do, anything that this House is doing. It's about intimidation and obstruction. That's it.
Yeah. And for everyone that's like, oh, you want to be the party of national security and protect America, I don't think I've emphasized enough how dangerous it is to do what these House Republicans did today.
Bring that phone in there?
Bringing a phone in there is so dangerous. And... if you want to know more about skiffs in general, I'll post this on our website. I'll retweet this. I highly recommend you follow, and I'm going to butcher her name. I'm so sorry because she's fantastic, and I highly recommend everybody follows her. But it's Mieki Ioyang. She's a House Intelligence Committee staffer, a former one, who did an amazing Twitter thread that does a real layman's deep dive on this topic. Tell you exactly why this is a problem. You know, we don't have all day to just spend on this, but that's great after reading for everybody to check out. She's fantastic with it.
And we're also, I mean, you know, tying this back with Trump, we were talking before we recorded, news broke right before we started or a little while before that Trump may have either had a big hand in these Republicans being in there or at least was very encouraging of the effort.
Yeah. So if you thought we were being conspiratorial when we said, yeah, they're just there to spy for the White House. Nope. Turns out he had advanced knowledge.
Yep.
And that's exactly what they were there to do. So that is literally, you said the word before, obstruction. They're trying to obstruct an investigation, an ongoing investigation at this point. So to recap what's going on in the world right here, Donald Trump potentially endangered our own national security by withholding military aid to the Ukraine. That destabilizes that region, lets Russia kind of do what they want in that, and it's just... that's a geopolitical nightmare.
Right.
And he did that in an effort to undermine a political rival, in this case, Joe Biden. That right there should be an impeachable offense. Donald Trump claims it's not. But now, House Republicans actually undermine national security by violating a secure room that has very strict rules and protocols. in an effort to obstruct that first piece I just mentioned. This is wild. If there's nothing to hide, what are they doing? These are all acting like really guilty people.
And if you think a cell phone in one of these places is not bad, I don't know if you ever bring it pop culturally. If you ever saw the movie Dark Knight Rises?
Yeah.
Morgan Freeman heads over to China and walks into a secure building where they take your cell phones at the top, and it works as a sonar. So, I mean, look, bad things can happen. Batman can come take you, bring you back. And in this case, that's Trump.
Trump would never fit into that latex costume.
True. But all these countries, Putin would, that would gain a lot from having you. That, like you said, though, would gain a lot from having a microphone in that room.
Oh, my God, yeah. That's national secrets are shared in these types of rooms.
Yeah. And even just hearing just this testimony, there's ways they can push this information, disinformation campaigns to try to help Trump and be all the way ahead on the information before we hear it. It's a disaster.
Well, you know, you brought up Batman. And now I can't stop thinking about either Trump or Putin in Batman costumes. So thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Hopefully all those quid pro quo drinks will wipe that from my memory.
Great movie, by the way.
Yeah. But let's continue that through line of just politics and pop culture then.
Okay.
We're going to circle back to what's going on with the NBA. We didn't get to touch on this part of it probably 2 weeks ago when we last dropped an episode. But we did mention how Houston's general manager, Daryl Morey, essentially stood with in support of Hong Kong, their quest to have a democratic government. Yeah, absolutely. That clapping, you know, that's official.
Good job, Daryl.
Drinking Liberally podcast sanctioned clapping.
Good job, Daryl.
For Daryl over there and for the people of Hong Kong. We did discuss what kind of backlash that led to, canceling preseason games in China, et cetera, et cetera. But the thing I wanted to bring up here was LeBron James's response. Because I read this and just I shook my head. Because look, LeBron James is a guy that I like to think is a pretty level-headed dude. I like his charity work. I think he does a lot of great work there. And this might be shame on me for looking to LeBron James to be the expert here.
It's not. LeBron has been super outspoken about human rights, you know, more so in the communities he's from, mm-hmm. And relating to race relations. But you're not wrong going down this road you're going down.
So last Tuesday, he said that it was his belief, James' belief, that Daryl Morey was either, quote, either misinformed or not really educated on the situation, end quote, between the NBA and China. And really insisted that the Rockets GM hadn't considered the repercussions of his words before he tweeted those out. We'll stop right there before I get to the most infuriating part of his statement, of LeBron James' statement. What repercussions would anyone expect when you're supporting a pro-democracy movement? There should be no repercussions.
I'll try to defend him a little bit here. And I want to be very clear. We're going to get to the next part, and I do believe there's an overarching theme to why he did this, and I think it's personal, and I think it's financial.
100%.
However, I will say for that, at the time Morey made those statements, we did have players, team staffers, full teams, and everything that comes with that in China. And we know what's happened. I mean, we've seen stuff that's happened before, whether it was the Ball brother getting arrested over there. So all I could say is if we were going to give him the benefit of the doubt here, possibly he could have been referring to, listen, send that tweet out, have that take, but wait till we're back. Wait till the players are back. Wait till their families are back. Do not put them in a situation where either they're looked down upon by the leaders there or their family's out for dinner and there's issues. So I'll shoot him that bail. If he had that in mind, that's reasonable. You know your people are over there. Daryl's part of the NBA. He knows who's on that convoy. Get him out of there first and then have your take.
And if that was his take, if that was LeBron's take and he said, look, you should have waited till we were all home and then say whatever the hell you want, I'm behind that. I'm totally behind that. But I really don't feel that's what he meant, because his statement goes on to say, you know, so many people could have been harmed. All right. So that does speak to your point there, Jeff.
Correct.
Not only financially, but right. Physically, emotionally, and spiritually. And then it's important to note from ESPN that LeBron James lost a ton of endorsement deals from China as part of this fallout.
Yep.
So he's got a huge financial incentive to kiss China's ass on this.
Yeah, so I think that statement, I think he meant both. But I do believe, and as I said, I think the bigger kind of push for him was the financial part. And if you're not aware out there, you're a big sports fan, you don't follow, big-time NBA players make more money from China on endorsement deals than they do on their contracts here. I mean, they might make more money here if they have a huge Nike or Adidas deal. But someone like Kobe Bryant made hundreds of millions of dollars from China. He might be the most popular person in China. LeBron's right behind him. So LeBron has a ton of financial vested interest in having a good relationship with China, as does the NBA. Right. They've really, really focused on expanding their market there. And LeBron's a spokesperson for the NBA right now. I will shoot the NBA a little bail. Commissioner came out, Adam Silver, and he backed Daryl Morey 100%. So I think this really does fall on James. I think, again, what you said is the main motivating factor, right? It's the financial. Hopefully part of that was that he was worried about the people over there.
Yeah, it's tough to believe with some of these guys. And like I said, you know, shame on me a bit for thinking that he'd be the moral leader on this topic. But
he's put himself in that position.
The fact that he said that Daryl Morey is either misinformed and not really educated on the situation, like, I'm sorry, what... LeBron James, what are you going to tell us about China that's going to make us think that they are better than the human rights violations we've been seeing?
Right, right, right. For years. I think that's a terrible... That was
awful take.
There's no defending that.
It's just cowardly to me. Yeah. So cowardly. So
he had hundreds of millions of dollars to lose, and that's how he chose to do it.
But he still has hundreds of millions of dollars.
Yeah, well, you know how this works.
Yeah, I'm aware. So...
Bezos is out buying your local CVS right now, so.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
I know what Bezos will be selling soon.
Quid pro quo?
Ooh.
I'm just kidding. How would you sell that?
Anything an excuse to drink for you, yeah, Jeff.
I could have found out a better place to put that.
But he probably will be selling a brand new book called A Warning.
Oh.
From an anonymous high-ranking Trump official that's dropping in a few weeks.
Exciting.
So this is a book that's coming out that's going to do supposedly some deep dive into the Trump White House. I mentioned LeBron James coming off as cowardly. I can't fathom a more cowardly grift than an anonymous official getting a book deal about this White House, rather than coming out and talking about any kind of impropriety that he's seen or she's seen, the way Bill Taylor's currently doing and the way the whistleblower came out and did in a more formal setting. Whoever this person is, this anonymous person, that they're coming out and they're going to make a profit off of this? Are you kidding me?
I'm so prepared for the next step of this. When Trump's actually out of office, hopefully soon, all the people that are going to come out in all these books and they're going to get on all these shows and start actually talking about what happened, every one of them should be deported immediately. Like if once they start singing and trying to get money off this, when they could have actually helped us when we were going through this, all of them out. Like it's gonna be an avalanche.
I'm sure.
Every staffer, every low level, it's gonna be crazy.
You get drips of it every so often from someone like an Omarosa, you know, leaves the administration and feels free to do whatever. Right. I'm just not so sure what they're all afraid of. This anonymous author is the same person that wrote an op-ed. I don't know, it's probably a year ago now in the New York Times, talking about what a danger Donald Trump is and that there's essentially a resistance within the administration that's working to keep America running and safe. And they're there as like a bulwark to prevent a Trump fascist takeover.
You're not putting your name behind this, and the best title you can come up with is a warning?
Yeah.
Ugh.
Gross.
A warning.
Yeah.
We need a warning now. We're 4 years in. We need a warning.
Don't buy this book, everyone. Come on. Do not reward this type of behavior. Apparently, some of it will go to charity, the price of it, the revenue from it, I should say. But come on. If you're ever going to pirate a book, I'm not recommending you pirate a book.
I'll just recommend pirate the book.
But this might be one. Don't let people profit off this grift. It's insane. We've seen enough of these cons.
Ugh, weasel. Yeah.
Because if this person is such a high-ranking official that their words matter, nowhere they'd matter more on a public stage with you having a press conference and just letting loose. I hope down the road I'm eating my words and it turns out this person actually has been helping out behind the scenes in investigations and things like that. I hope that's the case. But this book deal makes me think very much no.
I don't think they'd be letting him write this or let this come out if he was, you know.
And it's weird. There's also be like ethical questions about, is this still, is it a former high-ranking official or a current one? Because I don't think a current one could ethically do this.
I don't think ethics are a big part of what's taking place right now in our White House.
Right.
One. Number two, nothing's happening, so they got a lot of time on their hands. We're not getting anything done. But that is scary. If they are currently high ranking, it does take a really long time to write a book.
Ugh. Well, that's all I'm
Kevin,
gonna
I'm just
going
to say, this White House is a fucking disaster.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty, that's a safe statement to make.
Okay, just need to get that out.
I think an objectively true statement at this point. So let's stop talking about the White House for a little bit and move on to our fake news of the week. And yes, wild that this does not involve the White House.
Hey.
But I did a double take when I was reading the headlines for this particular story. This week's fake news revolves around Mark Zuckerberg's Facebook origin story. Now, we've seen The Social Network. Fantastic movie.
Great movie.
Yeah, I really actually love that movie.
It's so good.
So most people have a pretty basic understanding of how Facebook was founded, right? Mark Zuckerberg had the balls to say at Georgetown University that Facebook was founded as a response to the Iraq war. Yeah, insane. So I have this quote from him. He says, "I remember feeling that if more people had a voice to share their experiences, maybe things would have gone differently. Those early years shaped my belief that giving everyone a voice empowers the powerless and pushes society to be better over time." Which sounds pretty noble at face value, right?
Right.
At Facebook value. Ba-bum. I'll see myself out. But we're all old enough here. Most of our listeners, I believe, are old enough to remember when Facebook was founded and what it was like when it first released. Okay? And if you weren't, go watch The Social Network. Yeah. It does a pretty accurate representation of what it was intended to be. Facebook as a social networking service, this whole idea behind it, started as a Hot or Not ripoff.
Right.
Where Mark Zuckerberg just wanted to rate the attractiveness of fellow classmates at Harvard via a website and just make like a competitive ladder where everyone just rated and the hottest ones who scored the highest would rise to the top of this ladder. If that doesn't make your skin crawl a little bit, then I guess, I don't know what to tell you. You're probably not listening to this podcast. But that's how it started out. Then he started it as, the Facebook as we know it launched as FaceMash and then changed to the Facebook in 2004, right after the Iraq war starts. So, okay, your timeline kind of matches up. But here's some reminders about what the early version of Facebook was like, in case you don't remember, because it has drastically changed over time. When you first signed up for Facebook, one, it was open to only Harvard students to start.
You had to have a harvard.edu address.
Yes. Yep. There were no status updates back then. There was no, Kevin is going to record a podcast tonight.
Still have that in AOL Instant Messenger.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you weren't posting emo lyrics as your status updates back when Facebook first launched. There was no news feed at all.
No.
You weren't getting this algorithmic, curated list of articles and postings from friends and all that you do now when you first open Facebook.
I mean, the majority of us were on
MySpace.
On MySpace, getting inundated with Blink-182 lyrics
exactly.
On someone's page.
Or it was like Friendster. And that's what Facebook started as, was just like kind of a cleaner looking version of MySpace is what it was. You just had a wall that people could post on, but it was limited, again, only to Harvard at first and expanded to only people with college.edu email addresses after that. And at first, you could only talk with people at your own college.
Right.
So the idea that Zuckerberg is trying to paint here, that he saw what was going on and really make Americans understand.
Wow.
Not only people...
He's going for it, huh?
Yeah. Not only dissenting opinions on one's own campus, but across the world. I don't know what fever dream he's living in there, but that's just not the reality of what Facebook was. So it's complete and utter bullshit.
Yeah, I mean, I don't, it's getting to where we're at now, even from the origin, it's like, it's hard to even go on now. It's just, it's insanity. Yeah.
I have it just for the podcast at this point.
Yeah.
Share things.
That's it. So if you're listening to this off Facebook, thanks.
Yeah, shout out to you guys.
Yeah, great.
But now, we're in a world where, fake news actually matters because it's so out there in your face. The top 10 articles on any given day on Facebook are from right-wing, and in some cases far right-wing conservative websites.
This is crazy to me because, I mean, it wasn't long ago that we were realistically talking about and envisioning a presidential run from Zuckerberg.
Right. Yeah. It's right? laughable.
I mean, he spent a ton of money here in Newark, which is locally to us here in New Jersey, on the schools, which was fantastic. And he seemed to be kind of going around and doing a little bit of a grassroots meet and greets with people and coffee shops and weird places. And to go from that to now going on saying, you know, anything can be posted here and basically turning the other way from where he seemed to be headed, and we can never know, is a really big 180 over the last couple of years.
Yeah. We touched on this in previous episodes about how Facebook changed some of its policies, and they're really not enforcing the whole fake political news policy they had in the past, where they would pull things down that were blatantly false. And Elizabeth Warren put up a great Facebook ad where she is just blatantly lies in it and then says, let's see if Facebook takes this down, essentially. Like, just calling them out.
Oh, that
like,
was a great one.
Your move. And Zuckerberg today is actually in front of Congress.
Again. And spends a lot of time there.
Yeah. I'm going to link to a couple of the lines of questioning because this, you know, this was public. It was on C-SPAN. I'll link to that in our footnotes. But in particular, check out Katie Porter's line of questioning against Mark Zuckerberg. Yeah, watch him squirm in his seat. It's fantastic. AOC actually does a great job asking him questions as well.
As always.
And in particular, I love this question that was asked of him today. This is from AOC. Could I run ads targeting Republicans in primaries saying that they voted for the Green New Deal? Can AOC just buy advertising space saying that Matt Gaetz, the man we were just talking about that stormed that skiff room, that Matt Gaetz voted for the Green New Deal? Because that would undermine him with his constituency.
Correct.
It's a lie.
Yep.
But based on Facebook's rules, she could theoretically post it. And Mark Zuckerberg couldn't answer the question. Of course that should not. Be a simple yes or no.
He would never say that there, though.
Of course not.
Perjure himself? No.
It's insane. Like, Facebook has become a legit threat to democracy, which sounds like hyperbole, I know. It sounds insanely melodramatic to say, but they really have. And we've seen across the globe what a destabilizing presence Facebook can be. There's tons of evidence that Facebook is the inciting reason for a genocide in Myanmar.
Yeah.
That this was used to just post fake news that riled people up and led to murder, a complete genocide of people.
It's undefeated in the history of humanity. When anytime something gets too big, it's never good.
Yeah.
And, you know, we haven't seen it fully fall with Amazon yet, but it's coming. You know, there's something coming because it's undefeated. Enron, it's just undefeated. You can't have so much power and so much focus and so much say on everything or in everything and it ever be a good thing.
Yeah. The ideology of too big to fail needs to die.
It's like, crazy.
Whether it's banks or Facebook, whatever industry.
Wall Street
is,
got too big. Look what
way
happened.
Too big.
I mean, it's just, it's undefeated. I mean,
yeah.
That's it. I don't know what else to say. And Zuckerberg's not going away. We're going to get back, you know, probably quickly in these next few episodes into the Democratic candidates. Me and you have a big disagreement on Zuckerberg and Mayor Pete's relationship. By the way, they overlapped at Harvard for a couple of years.
Right. Mayor Pete was one of the first Facebook users.
There you go. He was on there.
He knows damn well what it used to be. And he actually, to his credit, did call out. So that wraps up our fake news of the week. You know, Facebook is trash if you want the cliff notes.
I really want off it. It's like a heroin drip.
Yeah, it's designed that way.
You just got to go back and look sometimes. You need to know what's that person you haven't talked to in 20 years from high school still doing.
What are they doing?
Even though you would never speak to them if you saw them on the street.
Yeah. All right, so that's going to bring us towards the end of our episode. We're going to focus on some positive news, things we can keep an eye on.
What? Ways, where?
Yeah, ways you can actually affect change.
Ah, there we go.
We're going to start doing a little more of that on the pod rather than sitting here bitching all day. So I know 2020 is really the focus of a lot of people right now, but there's a lot of races happening in just 2 weeks, this November, across the country. In particular, there's three of them I want to call out. We're going to post links to each one of these as well. But in states like Kentucky, there's a gubernatorial race going on there. Democrat Andy Beshear is actually in kind of a theoretical tie with the incumbent governor, Matt Bevin. Now, again, it's in 2 weeks. Why does this matter to us? Why does the governorship matter? It's because if Beshear wins, he has actually pledged to restore voting rights for former felons. People that have served their time, gotten out of jail, currently cannot vote in Kentucky. In fact, that's the case in a lot of states across the country. But in Kentucky, what makes it unique is that the governor has the ability to overturn that by him or herself. He could do it unilaterally, doesn't have to pass a law. So in theory, if Beshear wins, he could flip this on its head, restore those voting rights, and up to 300,000 people in Kentucky get their right to vote back. I don't care if they're Republicans or Democrats that they're getting the vote back here. The point is, they deserve to have their voting rights restored. Voter suppression is bullshit. This is just one of the many ways that states like Kentucky have been enforcing it, and I'd be happy to see this overturned. So we get Andy Beshear into power in Kentucky. That'd be fantastic. Governor John Edwards is facing re-election in Louisiana. That's another big one there. And then Mississippi actually has an open seat right now, and we have Tate Reeves, the Republican candidate, versus Jim Hood, the Democrat. Same situation. Mississippi is another state that doesn't allow felons to vote. This can be easily flipped. It's just whether or not these people, it could be 300,000 Republicans for all I care. It's just the right thing to do in this situation. So we're going to post on our website ways you can donate to these campaigns. They're in 2 weeks. It's crunch time. Typically, they're going to launch a number of late ads to get people to the polls and in support of these candidates. Now, if you can afford $5 to some of these people, donate $5. You don't have to be, you know, Mr. and Mrs. Moneybags to make a difference in this. Small donors matter, as we're seeing in the 2020 Democratic primaries right now. So those are the three key races to watch for this week. Kentucky, Louisiana, Mississippi. Check all of those out. Do some research on them. If you believe in what these candidates stand for, throw a couple bucks their way.
The big thing is we can't just focus on 2020. There's ways to make 2020 easier to get to the result we want to, and it's these type of races.
Because you have to wonder if a lot of these voter suppression tactics have been implemented in Republican-run governments, Republican state governments.
Yep.
And you have to wonder why, if their ideas are so good.
I don't wonder
and
at all.
So popular, why would you take the right to vote away from more people? Those are more voters that would be in your corner. Unless you think they wouldn't be in your corner because your ideas are shit.
Correct. Correct and correct. Yeah. That's it.
So, in case we needed it spelled out.
Yeah.
So let's close out the episode with some additional rapid-fire things to keep an eye on. Here's two pieces of really good news. Over in California, governor over there just signed a new bill to prevent lunch shaming in schools. All kids at public schools are guaranteed a state-funded meal if they can't afford it. I think it's an awesome move. I want to see every single state across this country do this. There's no reason a child in school should be going hungry.
And even more than that, there's legitimate research tied to kids that get food have better test scores and
right.
do better in school.
It's probably
weird.
Hard to take that exam when your stomach's growling.
Correct. Yep. Yeah. And a lot of these kids, unfortunately, the breakfast they get or the snack or the lunch they get in school might be their only meal of the day. So to take that away from them is literally starving these children, which is crazy. Sad.
California's on the right track, and I hope to see more states.
Guess who's
follow.
Not on the right track? Cherry Hill, New Jersey. I just want to shame them really quickly. They have a program in place that if children are more than $75 in debt, they cannot participate in extracurricular activities, including prom and non-educational field trips. Shame on you, Cherry Hill.
Yeah. Follow California's terrible. Lead here.
Come on. It's gross.
So embarrassing.
And you know what bothers me about it? You see these things get national attention, and my wife actually said, you know, hey, can you go look? Can we pay off some of these kids' debt?
Yeah.
And that's amazing. Sometimes I almost feel like these get leaked by the school because that's always the reaction if it gets big enough news. So I think it's all gross. Whatever you're doing here is disgusting. It's not like they're serving filet mignon. These aren't
right.
super expensive meals.
Yeah, do you remember school lunches? Most of them were garbage.
Yeah, grilled cheese and turkey slop,
yeah.
which is delicious, by the way.
Unless it was pizza stick day. That was my favorite.
I hated to come in with bad news on your good news run here, but Cherry Hill, terrible job by you.
So let's pick our listeners back up then with our final piece of good news for this week. The hole in the ozone layer over Antarctica is the smallest it has been on record since it was discovered in 1982.
Shh.
Yeah. Don't tell Donald Trump.
Correct.
He loves the biggest and largest, but this is fantastic news for the planet in general and goes to show how small regulatory change like banning those aerosols. Hairspray. Yeah. Banning chemicals and hairspray makes a difference. Listen to scientists. It matters.
Please.
Well, that's all we have for you this week. Jeff, it's been good to have you back.
Good to be back, Kevin. Thank you.
If you all want to follow us on social media, you can do so on Twitter and Instagram at @drinking_libpod. You can also check out our website, www.drinkingliberallypod.com, for those links to footnotes and donation links that we talked about this episode. And of course, rate and review us wherever you're listening to this pod. We truly appreciate everyone that's done so already. Thanks for joining us this week. We'll talk to you next. Cheers. Quid pro quo.